But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Tell you what, Clint, I would bet my left test.
It's a Football Friday playoff edition on Sports Radio 610. Live from Buffalo Wild Wings on Park Row in Katy, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in as we are live here, live on The Drive. And we are live at Buffalo Wild Wings. I just saw the Bud Light girls. They just walked through, and they will have some things to hook you up with as well as we do. So make your way on out here. Park Row location here in Katy. Buffalo Wild Wings will be here till 6 o'clock, and you could stay a lot longer than that. You can watch the UT Ohio State game here, a big one in this city and a big one in college football. They've got TVs all over the place. Whether it's good stuff on or bad stuff on, they got TVs all over the place that you can check out. So come on out here to Buffalo Wild Wings. And Clint, we're hooking up people with a lot of stuff. We've got the new Ready to Roll T-shirt, Academy Sports and Outdoors hooked us up. We've got the new T-shirt you can win there. We've got an autographed helmet by Christian Harris. And an autographed football by Nico Collins you can win here. Also, two $50 Academy Sports and Outdoors gift cards that you can win. So a lot to hook you up with. And, fellas, again, the koozies and the swarm towels are back. Not the rags, the swarm towels.
The rally rags.
There you go. No, with the towels.
Get
they're
them
back.
The rally
well.
Rags spinning around.
I don't think that's a good way to go. So, come on out, hang out with us. A lot for you to get your hands on and win. All you got to do is fill your name out, put it in our raffle box, that's set up right here next to us, and you'll have a chance to win. All right, I see some people already responding off of the tees, and I am really interested in getting people's thoughts on this. I said on the tees, if they somehow don't win this game, even though I've guaranteed it, if they somehow do not beat the Chargers and their season ends tomorrow at NRG, would you consider this a failure or would you consider this a disappointment? This is based off last year. They won 10 games just like they did last year, won the AFC South just like they did last year. I think a lot of people's expectations were them taking the next step and moving beyond where they got last year. Would you consider this a failure or a disappointment if they lose?
Disappointment, without a doubt.
Yeah, not failure.
I mean, 10 games, you get back in the playoffs again. Year two, D'Amico Ryans. Year two, C.J. Stroud. I can tip my cap to that. But I think overall, it's a disappointment. Context matters here. You're 1-5 against playoff caliber football teams. If you lose this week, you'll be 1-6. A couple of those games were lopsided as hell. You're no closer right now to competing for a championship than you were last year in CJ's rookie year and D'Amico Ryans' first year. In fact, you could literally say you're further away because you didn't win a first-round playoff game. I think context matters, and the way in which it all goes down, I think is important. And the way that this season went and how you got to 1-5 versus the playoff caliber teams is it matters. And I think there's some you lose tomorrow, the Texans lose tomorrow, there's some major question marks about what the future looks like for a handful of guys.
All right, so Clint's more disappointment than failure. I see some people texting in it would be a disappointing failure. I think people have just combined them both. I've seen that from multiple failure or disappointment. I would lean towards it being a great second season for CJ and D'Amico. I choose neither of your choices, okay? If the Texans lose tomorrow, it's an absolute failure considering the expectations. Stroud would need to take a good look in the mirror. Not a failure, but a big, huge disappointment. Key injuries and CJ not making any progression sets us back. Someone texted in, win or lose, it's a disappointment. I'm like, well, hell. Okay, hold on. They win. They win. This season could turn out anyway. I don't know if they win, we can go disappointment yet. They win, they're in the same exact spot they were last year. But to go on with the person said, it's a disappointment because there was no progress shown throughout the season to give me any hope for the future. That's Ocho, absolute failure for people coming in. What'd you say? Context matters. I agree with you. I think context matters. I think there was a part in the season where, especially when it came to the injuries, where I just felt like the expectation shifted to me from contender to, hey, man, we're just going to take away, I mean, you know, Diggs for the year, Petrie for the year. We're going to take away now Tank late for the year. We're going to take away a lot of it. We're going to have you miss 5.5 games from Nico. I just think for me it's more disappointing. I personally, Clint, never felt like they were quite at the Ravens, Chiefs, Bills level. Even coming into the year, it felt like they were a year away from really competing. I thought Diggs and then put them in the conversation when they added that and Danielle Hunter and stuff. But I never thought they were to that level. So to me, it's not a fit. Like, when I consider a failure, to me, I think if Buffalo or Baltimore don't make a Super Bowl, this season was a failure.
Don't make a Super Bowl?
If they don't make it to the Super Bowl, I think for what where their expectations are, and maybe less Buffalo from the season because maybe they thought, but in the middle of the season, they became one of the better teams. Like the Lions, the Bills, the Ravens, the Chiefs. I think to me, those teams, if they don't make it to the Super Bowl, I think it's a failure. And I don't think that the Texans are on that level to where, hey man, they got in, they you know, did what they did last year. They're going through this year with costly injuries. I know it's an excuse, but it's also there. Costly injuries that have held them back. And obviously, as you said, they're poor play. There's been some steps back from the quarterback and the coordinator. So for me, I don't go all the way to just nothing was accomplished, and it's a failure. To me, it's more. I'd leave. I don't know about you, Tyler. I'd just leave away just disappointed. To me,
I mean, it's hard for me to.
Oh, I know.
To not
I know
use where that you're word. I mean, this was. I mean, we saw all the talking heads. We ourselves are talking heads, and there was a certain level of expectations going into this season that involved the word Super Bowl. So, man, I do feel it in me if that were to happen, but
yeah, because I mean, yeah, you because I get you, and I get someone texting you're taking a step back from what you did last year if you lose this game, and the expectations were that it would be better, but I do think, I mean, there's some things that happened in this year that to me explain why you're here, not all of the reasoning, but explain why you're here. All right, as we said, failure, disappointment, where you are on that, you can text in 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. Shout out to Derek Stingley, who made first-team All-Pro. And, boy, Clint, as you know, he did it in the perfect time. The perfect time when that contract comes up, baby. Got it in the perfect moment where he's first-team All-Pro, and now he can get a new deal. He has been really, really good this year. There have been moments. He's had moments, especially against the Dolphins, where he stepped up. But it was always a deal of, all right, if he is healthy, what kind of guy are you getting? If he stays 100% healthy, what are you getting? And we are seeing All-Pro level. We're seeing him and Patrick Surtain were the two corners in a year where there are some really good corners out there.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt about it. He deserves every bit of this. I mean, he is the when you go into games, two things. When you go into games and your defensive coordinator, everybody that covers a game of football and everybody that plays a game of football at the NFL level right now knows Derek Stingley, if need be, can shadow any player in football right now. And that's a big ask. I mean, that is one hell of a thing to be able to say and not check up about a corner. I think Derek Stingley's in that company right now. And then the second part of that is when you go a year and you make some big time clutch plays that are shown all week long on SportsCenter and everything else, then folks sit back and take notice. And he did that multiple times this year, and rightfully so. He's an All-Pro corner.
Yeah, big for him. Derek Stingley Jr., shout out to you. What is the – Tyler, help me out here if you could find it. What's the contract for the highest pay, the biggest contract we've seen for corners? Do you think Stingley is – do you think he should go at the top of the list? I mean, it would be a deal of his turn.
Cheryl?
I know Cheryl, help us out. I know Patrick Surtain got a big deal. I know Jalen Ramsey is still – high up there.
Is the question, should he?
You think he? Yeah, absolutely. You think the Texans are now going to have the highest paid corner? You think that's the route?
Absolutely. I mean, if we're going to play the $55 to $60 million a year game to quarterbacks that ain't pissed a drop, relatively speaking, then yes, Derek Stingley Jr. should be the highest paid corner in football. Yes.
713-572-4610. Those of you on YouTube and Twitch, are you comfortable? Are you comfortable with paying him as the highest paid corner? He had injury things, but again, this is a year where he has shown to be healthy, and when he's been healthy, he has shown that he can get those honors.
Jalen Ramsey holds that top spot.
Still? Damn. How much is Jalen making?
Yes, with the Dolphins, $24.1 million in total compensation, just edging out Patrick Surtain with the Broncos, who was at an even 24 in total comp.
Because him, Stingley, Sauce Gardner, who's they're all in the same draft. Trent McDuffie, they're all in the same draft. Trent McDuffie, second team All-Pro this year. He was first team All-Pro last year. All those three. I think probably all three of them will potentially jump Patrick Surtain as the highest paid corners. Because much like the quarterback situation, sometimes it's your turn. And I think actually different from the quarterback situation, like I know Jared Goff probably shouldn't go over half the guys he went over. But I think Patrick Surtain is the best corner in the league. But I could see like, hey, Jalen Ramsey's making 24.1. Yeah. If I'm Derek Stingley, I need to be making 25, 26.
Well, that's, I mean, look. 24 has got to be the number. Now, you get into guaranteed monies. I don't know what those guys' contract look like. I don't know what a typical corner contract looks like, but the guaranteed money obviously matters. Then you get into, is Derek Stingley in any way, shape, or form going to sign a team-friendly deal? Not that he should, not that he has to, but if he's serious about playing with great defenses around him, you know, they're going to need players that give team-friendly deals. And I'm not talking – cut themselves $5 million a year, but in just a sense of, does he walk in and go, nope, I need to be the highest paid corner in the league, or hey, let's work something out that makes sense for everybody, where I can keep my defense loaded, keep rushing the passer, where I can benefit on the back end of some early errant throws like I have. I mean, that's the kicker. But we're talking about pennies on the dollar for Derek Stingley, whether it's Texan friendly or Derek Stingley, I want to be the highest paid guy in the league at my position. Either way it goes, he deserves to be the highest paid guy in the league. I have no reservations whatsoever about whatever this next contract.
This ain't like how you felt about Nico when he came up.
No, it's not. it's not at all. Not one bit.
I don't. Someone texted in 20 million or let him walk to be team friendly. Like, I wouldn't mess with that. No, I mean, you drafted him, and I understand the injury thing is something to think about. His first 2 years, I mean, he missed quite a few games due to injuries. But then the second half of last year and then all of this year, he's been healthy and he's been one of the best corners in football. And I believe this, in today's day and age, obviously the quarterback is the toughest. It used to be like left tackle and other stuff. To me, because you don't get a lot of corners that affect the game that can kind of shut people down, or like Derek Stingley, his gift of taking it away. Yep. You don't get a lot of like shut down corners. Those are harder to me to find than anything else outside of quarterback. Those are those. It seems like it's less of those guys around.
Well, so I tell you, I can't
let that go.
They really, really like Derek Stingley Jr. And beyond just the on-field physical play, he is a very cerebral player. We had him a couple of weeks ago in the post game immediately following the Texans win. And I'm gonna tell you, man, him talking the game and you know just. You know, talking through his thoughts and moments when he's covering Tyreek Hill and getting interceptions. He is a very cerebral player, which I'm not saying that other guys aren't. I just don't think we knew that for sure about him. We knew he was a good player, but we didn't know if he's just out there physically dominating or what. But he's a very cerebral player. He's a team-first guy. He's obviously very gifted. You talked about the ball skills. I mean, these guys are dead-ass serious, by the way, talking about he could get some run at the wide receiver position. They're dead-ass serious. So
would have been the time to do it.
Yeah, well, this isn't just a good corner situation. This isn't just a guy. Hey, this guy can play a solid Pro Bowl level corner. I mean, this is a guy, if he stays healthy, you could see, given all the clutch gene, when big moments come his way and the ball's in his area, he makes plays. I mean, this is a guy that you could see being Pro Bowl and All Pro several years here running.
Yeah, when you take the ball away, as much as he does in terms of the attempts that he gets.
Yeah.
The times that the ball is thrown his way, when you take the ball away, the amount of times, I think he's got like 10 interceptions in his last like 20 games or something. Like that is something that is absolutely valuable. Yeah. And the part about him is he's not feast or famine. Like Diggs in Dallas,
yes,
he may take it away seven times, but he's going to give up a ton. Now, he's gotten beat a couple of times, New England. There's a couple of times. It's not like him. Marcus Peters was another one that took the ball a lot, but he also took so many chances and risks that he gave up big plays behind him.
Yeah.
So he's a combination of taking it away and not giving up big plays behind him as well. So that's super valuable.
Yep. That's a guy that you feel real comfortable about giving a boatload of money to. Hasn't been one lick of a problem off the field. I mean,
time he tried to take out Dalton.
The scuffle with Dalton, which I didn't
have a problem with.
No, I didn't. I didn't feel so strongly about Dalton Schultz at the time as I do now. I don't like sucker punches. That's for damn sure. But I'm okay with physical altercations from my defense. I don't want my quarterback punching nobody. But if my defense wants to get hot and get out of pocket a bit, I'm okay with that. In the big picture. So, look, I just think Derek Stingley Jr., very rarely am I just, hey, man, yeah, I'm good with whatever number they come to with a player, but I am definitely that way with Derek Stingley Jr.
Yeah, he's special. All right, coming up. All right, big one in Dallas tonight. And Clint knows quarterbacks. Clint knows college football. I got a question for him tonight when it comes to Texas. Would Texas have a better chance winning this game if Arch Manning was playing? If he was the quarterback tonight against this Ohio State team, what they can do, what they bring to the table, would they have a better chance if Arch were the quarterback? We'll discuss that coming up next.
It's a Football Friday playoff edition on Sports Radio 610. Live from Buffalo Wild Wings on Park Row in Katy, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, congratulations to our first winner. Many more prizes in store. All you got to do is make your way on out here on this Football Friday. We're here in Katy, Park Row location, Buffalo Wild Wings, TVs all over the place, food, beer. The Bud Light girls are here. They've got some gifts that they're going to hook you up with. If you would like also a chance to win autographed football, I believe by Nico Collins, helmet by Christian Harris. You can win that, a game size helmet from Christian Harris, and we got a $50. That's, you know what?
There's two of them in there.
I've decided, Osita, the next thing we're hooking somebody up with, one of these $50 gift cards to Academy Sports and Outdoors. And I'm telling you, they still got prices and deals right now from the holidays. I just got a text. I shop there so damn much they gave me a text. Let me know of the latest deals they've got this weekend. So you can get out there, get your gear, get your Texans gear, get your Rockets gear, get your Astros gear. You can do whatever you want there But we got $50 gift cards, and that's going to be the next thing somebody will win coming up in this hour. So come on out and have a good time and hang out with us. All right. One thing you can do when you come out to Buffalo Wild Wings is watch this this national semifinal tonight. The Ohio State Buckeyes and the Texas Longhorns. And Clint, I said it earlier, man, and I don't feel great about Texas in this game, because anytime they played teams that have their similar athletes or up to their level, it just doesn't seem like they have played to where their level is. I guess we haven't seen their A game yet. I guess we can maybe say that, but this may be crazy. And some Texas fans out there, or college football fans, you can dive in on this as well on the text line and YouTube and Twitch. But I don't know, it feels like to me something's always missing from the quarterback spot. It seems like that's where it is with Texas in these games. And that is with Quinn, obviously. Do you think they would be in a better situation to win this game if Arch Manning was who they turned to?
No, I don't.
Not just because he's not ready, or
yeah. Well, I don't think he's played enough football. To get his first action.
That's right.
And I know he's done some of the run heavy stuff, and the there's been an Arch Manning package throughout the year. But yeah, I don't think that would be a good idea from jump. Now, I've said all along that this strikes me as a playoff where we could potentially see Arch Manning replace Quinn Ewers the way that we saw Jalen Hurts get replaced by Tua. But I think that's going to require Quinn playing bad and Sark, kind of like he did in that SEC championship game.
That's a great example of what I'm wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in that SEC championship game, you know, Quinn was just ineffective, and he was like, let me see if I can get a spark. And the bad thing was it was just right before the half, and Arch didn't have much time to give that spark.
You're talking about the first game against Georgia.
Yeah,
I thought you said the SEC championship game. Sorry. But
oh, was it the first game?
The first game. Yeah, the first game is when that happened against Georgia. Yeah, when he was playing terribly.
Yeah.
And then he went back to Quinn in the third quarter.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay. But that's like, I don't think going to Arch now before the game or even with a week of preparation would be the way to go. Your national championship hangs on Quinn Ewers being able to play his best football. Now, if you get in there and he's obviously not playing his best football and you've got to make a gut decision in the moment, then I think it's good that you got a guy like Arch Manning to go to, a guy that can use his legs, a guy that, you know, he's getting better every week at practice with every rep that he gets. And you hope he can, you know, he can capture, you know, that moment, the magic in a bottle, if you will, lightning in a bottle, if you will, and have a big half of football, or a big, you know, big quarter of football, and help you get to a national championship. I think there's still a chance we could see that.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've seen from a jump.
No, I think you make some fair. I'm trying to think that the 2-1 is a good example. How much clock did he get?
It was the first half, wasn't it?
No, I mean, I'm just saying, in the season, right? Jalen played a ton. No, you know, Jalen did get hurt a little bit, and Tua did have to play some games for Alabama that year. I think Tua played more. No, hell, I don't know. I forgot that Quinn got hurt and Arch played about two or three games this year while Quinn was injured. So he has got some clock. So I think it would be a very similar situation. I see some people coming on the text line. Come on, bro. We asking about Arch Manning. Question is, at this stage, Quinn is the quarterback. I'm cool with y'all saying Ohio State is going to beat us tonight. I'm cool with your question. I listen, the reason why I throw it out, and someone says Sark's loyalty to Quinn is going to cost him a national title this year. The reason why I just throw it out there is Ohio State, their defense, clearly, like, they're an athletic defense that's going to cause problems. And I just feel like Arch's skill set, you know, is going to cause more issues. And I understand he hasn't got a lot of reps. He's probably not getting a ton of reps in practice. So that part makes sense. But it's just, to me, what Arch can do and all the parts of his game, his skill set, presents more of an issue than Quinn. Like, to me, I feel like they know where Quinn's going to be.
Yeah.
And they know what's
going on. Well, that's the thing, Ron. If you get into a game like tonight and they can't protect, there's no question about it, Arch Manning has has a better set of wheels in terms of making things happen with his legs. It may not look like it may not look the way we want it to look, because you would like to look more polished and controlled. It's a little bit out of control when he takes off, yeah. But it still gives you a better chance. So, yeah, I mean, you can even chalk it up to whether Quinn is just not playing well, or if Quinn, they can't protect him as well as they need to, and that's the source of him not playing well. Yeah, I could see Arch getting some run. And again, if he gets hot and makes some plays, it would be hard to take the kid off the field. I think it's just a matter of time. Does it happen in the playoffs? Does it happen in the offseason? It's not if, it's when.
He's only had like five snaps in the playoffs, yeah. in their three games or two games leading up to it. He should, at the very least, as Tyler, who was there in attendance, knows, he should at the very least get in to me changing it up, running the football.
The change of pace?
Right, like, for that reminder, brother.
I'm sorry. I mean that's the game, the biggest game, or their biggest win. I think he got in the end zone twice with them using him, using his legs. At the very least, it seemed like they hadn't
one
done
of them
that
wasn't really as a touchdown, but that's a different story.
Yeah, I mean, it scored. They got it as a touchdown in there.
Yeah,
but
they were generous with that pylon.
But I don't know. It's been interesting that they didn't do it, because I don't remember him doing that against Arizona State.
Yeah.
Or they haven't used that a lot. So, I don't know. I think in this game with Ohio State, they got to explore everything. Everything's got to be on the table. But the Tua thing, I didn't even think about that when thinking about this thought. The Tua thing is a good one. Like, is there a place, because I damn sure think Quinn can play that bad to where you're like,
oh, no question.
I mean, he did against Georgia.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt. I mean, that like I said, it's going to take Quinn's best performance to win this game. And I'm not saying that because he typically goes out and plays lights out. I mean, he appears, and I think it's just his demeanor. I just don't think he's an over-the-top, beat-my-chest, overly confident type of quarterback. He strikes me as a guy that's a little worried about what everybody around him thinks, and strikes me as a guy that's a little bit worried about every mistake he makes instead of being 10 feet tall and bulletproof. He just doesn't strike me as that guy. You get into the second quarter in that ball game, and you got this guy that doesn't appear to be handling the pressure well. It would be hard if I were Sark not to pull the trigger, at least.
Well, especially when your season's on the line.
Yeah, at least just see if Arch can create a little bit of a spark. So, depending on what Quinn Ewers comes out, man. Like I said, I don't care if he completes 12 of his first 15 passes. If the three that are incomplete were potential touchdowns or field flipping explosive plays, like, that's a problem against Ohio State. The margin of error against Ohio State for Quinn Ewers, it shrinks significantly, and so that's the key here with Quinn, and I think that's the key to the game. But to the point we're having now, do we see Arch Manning? I think that's the same point, right? Yeah. that could get you there.
Yeah. All right, coming up as we continue on this Football Friday, sometimes I may reach a little bit with something, and this may fall into that. But there's something about this game between the Chargers and the Texans that I don't know a ton of people are talking about. I don't want to act like I'm the only one talking about it. Haven't heard it a lot. I wonder how much this factors into the game. We'll discuss that coming up next.
It's a Football Friday playoff edition on Sports Radio 610. Live from Buffalo Wild Wings on Park Row in Katy, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in. As next segment, if you're coming in, you got a chance to win a $50 gift card to Academy Sports and Outdoors. As soon as this segment ends, we will hook somebody up with that. And again, you got signed football from Nico Collins, signed helmet from Christian Harris. You got a chance to win all kinds of prizes today. Sorry for those of you on YouTube and Twitch. Shot the guns for some reason.
Yeah, don't do that, man.
That's all right. I'll show my nipples later.
That's a 15-yard penalty in the NFL. They hit that kid. Whoever was Baker threw a touchdown or threw a big first down to a kid. I think that kid who went to Washington last year, receiver, he came out and did the just like this, and they hit his ass with 15. And McMillan? Yeah, McMillan. Hit him with 15. He felt so bad. He was like, Coach, I didn't.
That's the dumbest thing ever.
They've got to change that. They have got to.
I mean, it's an overreaction. I mean, everything is stupid.
Brandon Cooks gets to do the bow and arrow. Isn't that a weapon? What if I would? I would.
It's simply the gun violence stuff.
I want to knife something.
Somebody ought to knife a gut of deer after they score a touchdown.
Gut of deer.
See how long it takes the NFL to outlaw that. What are we doing, man?
All right. Ridiculous. Again, come on out here to Katie as we're having a good time here. All right, Clint, tell me you and Tyler, tell me if I'm reaching here, and the listeners as well. Does this factor at all to you in this game? Jim Harbaugh, who is the head coach of the LA Chargers, this is his first year, but his previous decade, he was the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines, in which he has had some experience playing C.J. Stroud. This isn't the first time he's played C.J. Stroud. Not only that, Jesse Minter, his defensive coordinator, was also the defensive coordinator at Michigan. He is now the defensive coordinator with the Chargers. Hell, Clint, they got six other defensive assistants that they moved from Michigan to the Chargers. In those games, Harbaugh was 2-0 against C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud threw for some yards. Some of it came into some garbage time late in last year's game, but they're 2-0. C.J. threw two interceptions. He was sacked five times in the two games, and Ohio State outscored them 87-50. They've seen him before. This isn't the first time they've seen him. Do you think their experience and their success while in college at Michigan and Ohio State, do you think that has any effect in this game? That matters at all in this game?
I don't know that the success,
because the NFL is different than
yeah. But I do think there's something to be said about familiarity with a quarterback in particular. Like, it's if you're talking about extensive, digging and film watching and scouting on a guy to find an advantage, and I would imagine that a good chunk of those coaches were probably responsible for some of that on the defensive side of the football. And so when you just talk about familiarity with a play caller or familiarity with a quarterback, I think those things are real. If there were two or three things that they identified when he was at Ohio State that he struggled with, let's just say pressure, because right now C.J. Stroud has really struggled of late against pressure.
And they got him five times, in sacks in those two games.
Yeah, so, I mean, you look and there's, if there's a tendency there that they noticed back in the day, and now they watch the film and all of a sudden these advanced stats in the film are telling you the same thing. Hey, he's still struggling with this or that, identifying this or that, processing this or that, making this throw versus that throw. I would think that could be used against him. I would think that that's advantage Chargers if there is something like that out there.
Especially being like, obviously these were NFL level coaches down there. This is Jim, and obviously Jesse Minter, who's getting interviews himself with it. I just looked at it. I was just like, wonder what that looked like when they played each other down there. May not be a big deal. Like someone said, college in the NFL is completely different.
Totally different. But I think there's something about knowing your opponent.
Yeah.
And those strengths and weaknesses, knowing your opponent, and these guys, while they haven't studied them, the Texans or C.J. Stroud much at this point because they didn't play them and it just doesn't have anything, there was no reason for them to study them, that there is a history there with C.J. Stroud, the most important player on the Texans. And really, as it pertains to this game, the most important player whether the Texans can play well and compete and win this game. So yeah, I would think there's some familiarity there, and that could potentially benefit the Chargers defense. Yeah.
Yep. 2 years ago, they faced up that crew. I just looked at it, I was just like, damn, they got a lot of guys who was on that coaching staff at Michigan, defensive coordinator, the head coach, and all of that. All right. Notre Dame was able to pull the thing off last night against Ohio State. And now Marcus Freeman started out his time there. He was a young hire, 35 years old, started out there 9-4. Then he goes to 10-3, and now he's 14-1 after losing his first home game to Northern Illinois. 14-1. Now they're in the national championship game for the first time since Brian Kelly got Notre Dame's doors blown off of him by Alabama.
Sitting at a Mexican food restaurant in Little Rock, Arkansas. I literally, it took them beating It, who they beat in the last round? Who'd Notre Dame beat? Georgia?
Georgia, yep.
It took them beating Georgia for me to forgive them all these years later.
And again, that's a different feel because, hell, they only had to beat their schedule and then they were in, right? They didn't have to go through any kind of playoff system. Are you surprised Notre Dame is in a spot like this again?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, the lack of weapons, as I mentioned earlier, I don't think there's a wide receiver that was on the field last night that would crack the top three of either team that's going to play tonight. I thought that would be what held them back. But it clearly wasn't. They were able to go out there last night and make more plays than Penn State. And so I didn't know their defense was going to be as good as they are. I knew they were good. I didn't know they were going to be as good as they are. And quite frankly, I've not given Riley Leonard – I ain't given Riley Leonard credit since I fell in love with him at Duke. I loved him at Duke. And when he left, the first time I watched him at Notre Dame, I'm like, what the hell happened? And early on, it was ugly for Riley Leonard. He righted the ship. And he's playing really good football.
But that might be the best I've seen him throw the football.
Yeah, I mean, but the because you know he's always got that had that you know I'll run downhill. I'll get you 3 yards when you need two. I'll make it happen. I'm a Charlie Hustle type of guy. But boy, you add a clutch factor there throwing a ball in the second half last night. The way they adjusted at halftime and came out from a coaching perspective, they're clearly the better coach football team. Than the Penn State Nittany Lions. So, yeah, I'm surprised that they've made it to a national championship. I'm surprised that they are as good as they are, and I believe they are good. I still think that they lack weapons on the offensive side of the football, but they are a well-coached football team. They're better than I thought on defense, and Riley Leonard is the glue that holds them boys together.
See, I'm even more big-picture surprised. Like, I thought, you know, there are certain programs and that if they get the right coach, they're just it's a program that kind of sells itself. They get the right coach, they're gonna be fine.
Yeah,
right. Alabama, it was weird, and then Saban got there, and Alabama was bigger than it's ever been. Right, Texas was kind of weird after Mac, and then Sark got there, and they got the right guy there. It's rolling. I thought that Notre Dame had reached like Nebraska territory.
You had the good old days, Roman.
I just thought because obviously it's harder to get into like Notre Dame. They're what you have to do to get into that school is not the same as you have to do to get into most of the other schools around. They've got more academic.
You got to be Catholic, right?
I don't think you have to be Catholic. Hell no, Quadri is wild. I swear he ain't Catholic, but. But, I mean, they've got those more academic things that you have to – hurdles that you have to leap over than you know, South Carolina or A&M or Arkansas.
A little harder to get into.
And then it's just Notre Dame hadn't been Notre Dame forever. Like, I mean, Tyler, you're what, 35?
No, I just turned 34.
34? Notre Dame, in your lifetime, Notre Dame hasn't been – What many people talk about, and he's 35.
The height of their relevance had to be Manti Te'o.
Yeah, Manti Te'o. That's the same year,
and his non-existent girlfriend. Of course,
that's that 1 year.
That's a year Alabama stole. All I had for Notre Dame out of my heart.
See, this Johnny is
Sean Pendergast's glory years. Like I thought it was over, but clearly they found the right coach.
Yeah.
And I didn't like they've done what because Nebraska, right? I think Nebraska's done like done into the Tom Osborne where they're just getting recruits because they're a national program. And I thought Notre Dame was kind of sliding into that because it's been a long, long time. I mean, Brian Kelly dipped. Yeah. Like he said, I can't win here.
Developed a Southern accent.
Yeah, he's lost that too. But it's
dancing on a stage with players is awesome.
I didn't think that they could get back to this stage because I just didn't think that Notre Dame was going to sell the way it did.
Yeah.
And look at this, they may not have as good as athletes as maybe as you look at, but they got some dudes up there. They got a few.
Well,
dudes
I mean, look, they got a couple of guys, but the thing is man, when you look at like what Washington had last year. You look at what Texas had last year, and really this year. I know they haven't panned out, but they've got dudes. Look at what Ohio State has this year. I know it's not a great topic right now because one of LSU guys is in some serious trouble right now. But, I mean, those guys didn't have a great year, but they've got weapons outside. Like the thought that really both of those schools last night, Notre Dame and Penn State, I mean, you're talking about two blue bloods that I would think they've got just as much money at their fingertips as anybody out there. To not have, I'm just talking about, even if under, like, just that little jitterbug dude that you can flip a little screen out there to and he can make a guy miss in a phone booth, right? To not have that type of player available is wild to me.
Notre Dame had a little bit more on the outside. Obviously, they did have
a wide receiver catch a ball.
He catch a ball and
number one was well, number
and,
one was
yeah number player. One and he set that guy on his ass on that move he made for that long touchdown. But just to ever get to a point that Notre Dame in this era would just dominate Georgia up front. Mm-hmm. But like move their lines would dominate Georgia, and then their backups, some of their backups would dominate, except for that kid 11 coming off the edge for Penn State Smith. But outside of that, push them around. I just didn't think those days were over. And Marcus Freeman clearly was the right coach. What you got coming up at the four?
All right, I gave you a few absolute gotta haves for the Texans this weekend to beat the Chargers. I want to revisit those. They were all on offense, and I want to give you a few for this defense, right? The offensive ones are easy, simple, stupid. The defensive ones might be asking too much, but it's got to happen if the Texans are going to beat the Chargers. We'll cuss and discuss the got-to-haves on defense next right here on Sports Radio 610.
Before we get to that boner,